Welcome into K-State Online. I am Mason Voth, joined by Derek Young. In this edition of the KSO Show, it is time for our preview of K-State and Tulane as we get closer and closer to kickoff. And the Cats looking for their first win ever against the Green Wave. The last two games have ended in wild disappointment, whether you go back to the first meeting between the two sides in the late 80s, where the K-State coaching staff that was in the press box thought the game was won, and they went down with time still on the clock, and they lost the game as they were heading down to celebrate. Or the 2022 game where you're sitting around after week three thinking, does this team suck? That team went on to win the Big 12 title because the team they lost to turned out to have a great coach, a great quarterback, a great running back, and a team that beat the Heisman Trophy winner and USC in the Cotton Bowl. So, yes.
It was on our three mall preview show, but one of the questions Kurt asked was like, what was a more frustrating loss, 22 versus Tulane or 2023 versus Missouri? And I said, in the moment, probably Tulane, because that felt like that season was going to go down the drain. But now with the luxury of hindsight, that Tulane game meant absolutely nothing.
Yep.
Because it had zero consequence, positive or negative, on what would happen that season. Because if they had beaten Tulane, nothing really tangibly changes.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Looking back on it, that game means nothing now. And then you think about so many of the losses that K-State sustained last year. If even just one of those turns into a win, you view the season in a different light because it's a 10-win season. It's all these different things. Like,
yeah, and if you beat Missouri, does that like get your mind right for another game? So maybe you have another less loss, because you know we all know this. Like the psychology and the mental aspect of college football in itself, because you're dealing with such young kids, means a lot. Think about, but actually, what that game meant more for was also Missouri, because. Yeah. I mean, if K-State beats Missouri, I mean, Eli Drinkwitz is on the hot stuff.
Well, does Brady Cook start another game at Mizzou? Right. Like, it's just
he was getting booed in that game.
Yeah, wild the way that that game ended up playing out. Before we talk about the game that takes place on Saturday, let's tell you about a game that takes place next season to kick things off. The Aer Lingus College Football Classic is coming in 2025. The Cats are a part of it, and you can join your Wildcats in Ireland as they kick off the 2025 football season against Iowa State in the Aer Lingus College Football Classic. Game tickets can be secured now through a travel or hospitality package. All-inclusive travel packages include premium game tickets, luxury hotel accommodations, an exclusive K-State welcome experience, and more. Game day hospitality packages include premium in-stadium hospitality with food and drinks and premium game tickets. Don't miss out on the trip of a lifetime. Book your package now at cats2ireland.com. That's cats, the number 2, Ireland.com. All right, let's get into it. Let's talk Cats Green Wave. And maybe the first place that we should start is by talking about the weather. Rarely do we talk weather on the KSO show, at least when we're previewing a game, but although it feels like we brought it up a handful of times last year about what the forecast looked like, and then eventually it kind of got out of the way, it didn't matter. It does indeed look like it is going to rain now on Saturday in New Orleans. It's supposed to rain basically all day tomorrow. I think it's been raining all day today, and everything the last 3 days in New Orleans has been a monsoon. Maybe a little lighter for game day, but the forecast has pushed it in to the entirety of the game, of being anywhere from a 45 to 60% chance as of recording this on Thursday afternoon. So what do you make of what the rain could do to this game? And does it have a negative or positive impact on the Cats?
Well, when you hear rain, you just assume that it nullifies the passing game for both teams. And I don't know if there's an advantage to be had by either one, because regardless of what we saw last week, I think Tulane would rather run the ball as well. That's just how I feel.
That's true. I would say that after last week, there are a lot of people that are probably thinking, well, it would actually be nice if the rain just forced Connor Riley to run the football more and made everybody worry about that. I view this as a positive for K-State. I think that it it will do them some good to play in this. Maybe it does force them to run the ball more and just be okay with abusing Tulane how they should.
Although Tulane is a good D-line, I will say.
Yeah, but I do think that this is interesting from the passing aspect, if it does impact it in any way, because what you'll have to cut through and decide is, was the passing bad last week just because it was kind of fluky? You said yesterday that Connor Riley kind of thought that everybody played a little tight on offense at times, and maybe that had to do with new roles, new jobs, all that, and also just the fact that like they knew that the game plan, I think I described as they were basically game planning the first half with one hand tied behind their back, where they were going to be more pass heavy than what they would generally be. Feels like kind of the order in which they called plays would be a little bit different than normal. So I think we're going to have to see in this game, was K-State bad at throwing the football because they just can't do it, or because there were some of these other factors that boiled over for them? And if that's the case, then I don't think that the rain will overly impact them, unless it really is just downpour. You can't see anything or hold on to anything. I'm not overly concerned about K-State's passing game being impacted by the rain. I think K-State has the biggest impact on their passing game.
We typically do overstate the impact of rain unless it's a complete downpour. It doesn't usually interfere with what you're trying to do in the passing game too much, unless it's also windy. So we'll see. We'll see on that front as well. What I will say is, if we find out that the weather is impacting things, then I'm probably not going to use this game as a barometer for the passing game. Just won't be something I do. But what another thing I would say is, whoever can maybe start fast, take away the other team's running game, and basically force them to pass in these circumstances, in obvious passing downs, and maybe tee off a little bit, is probably going to want it's going to be able to come out of here looking much better than their opponent.
It'll be interesting to follow along with and watch.
Came down. It was 10.
Yeah. It's been all over the place. I think it opened at like 7.5 and then it got up pretty quick. So depending on where you look, it's 9, it's 10, it's 9.5. But that's been pretty consistently between 9 and 10 over the last few days for the line of K-State and Tulane. I'll ask you this to start, because this was kind of something fascinating to follow the last two seasons with Chris Klieman. Yep. Is if K-State wins the coin toss on Saturday and you are Chris Klieman, you're calling the shots, are you taking the ball and trying to give that immediate life to your offense? Or are you saying our defense is a kingmaker, go out there, pop them in the mouth, get us the ball, and we've got a leg up on them already?
Yeah, I understand the thought of taking the ball and wanting to start fast, but you could start fast with your defense too. Your defense is plenty good enough, and I'm a believer in kind of that middle eight thing and deferring, right? I just, you can't let the other team kind of get you in that way, in my opinion. If you have the opportunity to kind of control that and steal a possession and get one or two more possessions than the other team, I think you do it, especially now in college football, where we just talked about in our last show, where it seems possessions are at a premium.
Okay. I just, you know, with the rain too, like what you're talking about, you wonder if you just try and get that advantage as early as possible. And I think back to 2022, where Chris Klieman seemed to know his team well enough to know the games where it was, we need the ball first, or we can give it to the opponent if they won the toss. And it helped motivate and get the team feeling good. Like, because what they started and took the ball against Oklahoma, right? That was like the start of it, where they won the toss and took it and went down and scored, and it set the stage for basically the rest of the season.
He has a tendency to want to do that. He was dealing with some experienced players on offense. Your experience this year is on defense, and this is your first road game.
Okay. All right. That is the official Derek Young stance. Kick the ball away. Play scared to start the game.
Call tails.
Call tails. So is that you saying that you think heads wins or what?
Tails never fails.
Yeah. All right. I always go against that. I'm always a heads guy. So we'll see how it works out for K-State on Saturday. You already mentioned Tulane and some of the areas where they have experience. Where do you think probably are the one or two big talking points that K-State will have to focus on most with Tulane that could really seriously hurt them, because you look around this Tulane team, there's a lot of experience in a lot of pockets. Really, the only place that doesn't have it is at quarterback if they go with Mensah again.
Yeah, and they're still losing a lot of talent for 22 as well and 23. Patrick Jenkins, I think, is going to be a handful on the edge. And you got two offensive tackles that, you know, are still kind of getting their legs underneath them, even though, you know, Connor Riley did rave about Carver Willis, you know, in his Thursday press conference. And Carver Willis still hasn't started a full season yet. Easton Kilty's played one FBS football game. And they're going to have their hands full with a guy that had 14 sacks last year in Patrick Jenkins.
Yeah, the line will be interesting to watch, because I thought they did pretty well for the most part on Saturday. They weren't all that noticeable, but you are facing a team with maybe a higher level and everything else that they could certainly challenge you a little bit more.
Interesting thing, too, though, is like you just assume Tulane's going to be a good defense because they were great under Willie Fritz. They hired Jen Summerall, who's also a defensive guy. You watched that Southeastern Louisiana game last week start to finish. The first seven drives that Southeastern Louisiana had went into Tulane territory. Amazingly, they didn't score any of them. I think there was two punts. A short punt, two turnovers, a turnover on downs, a missed field goal. It was a mess.
Southeast Louisiana had just the worst type of game. We talked about this on the Sunday show, how many opportunities that were there, but they started their first drive. They went 10 plays, 50 yards, and they fumbled at the Tulane 26. And then they came back and had a really nice return. They had to settle for a field goal that they missed. And then, the three and out. And then right before the half, they threw a pick six that made it 21-0 Tulane. So they had it tough. They had their opportunities there. And you would feel like K-State will maybe come through a little bit more when those opportunities present themselves. Also, maybe that big kick return is something to note, because we know K-State is wanting to get the return game back going. And if Tulane has already shown to be susceptible.
And the backs for Southeastern Louisiana were actually getting going. It's just like, I think they just got sacked a few times there and just destroyed their actual rushing yard average. If you take away the sacks, I think it's pretty solid.
Yeah, they struggled a little bit in that department. If you go look at their rushing numbers and everything, they lost, it looks like, at least 19 or 21 yards from their sacks during the game. But their backs had a good day. 5.2 a carry, 8.5 a carry for their top two running backs in the game.
It's a Tulane pass rush, something to keep in mind. They can get home.
Yeah. Flipping sides of the ball, we know K-State's defense is really good. What are they facing with this Tulane offense that, we were a little surprised in week one when we saw that Ty Thompson, the Oregon transfer, appears to be number three in this tight quarterback battle, and they go with the youngest guy in Mensah, but they do have a really good running back in Mekhi Hughes.
They did use Ty Thompson as a change of pace for a little bit of QB run, so it's something you got to keep in mind. My assumption is that he did not win that job and they wanted him to, which is why I'm a little down on Tulane, but also kind of like it's the same situation as Michigan, I think, where Davis Warren, the walk-on, won the job, even though they wanted Blake Orji to win the job, but it was because Blake Orji, they found out, couldn't throw the ball. I think Tulane found out that Ty Thompson couldn't throw the ball. So I'm not as impressed by Tulane just for that reason. Redshirt freshman quarterback. This is his first major game. He actually did well against Southeastern Louisiana, but going forward, I think that game's kind of a little bit of a fluke, right? I don't think him and the passing game is going to be their strength. And I also think Mekhi Hughes going forward is going to look better than he did in week one.
Well, and the reason why you want a quarterback that wins the battle that can throw the ball is because probably the most anticipated playmaker that Tulane has added to their offense is Mario Williams, a receiver who went 4 for 124 in the game against Southeast Louisiana. His last 3 years, he's been coached by Lincoln Riley. He started at OU, and the last two, he was at USC, and in Caleb Williams' Heisman season, had almost 600 yards receiving. He's been right around 30 catches a year the last three seasons at OU and USC. So he's got the pedigree there, and this might actually be a good thing, because we talked about after the game on Saturday, K-State's corners, which they're in safeties to some extent, but the corners high hopes for them. They didn't really have to get tested at all on Saturday. They will get tested now, you would think, or at least Tulane will try to force that issue upon them.
And Mario Williams is really, really fast. So he's good enough. I don't, Shaz Preston, who's another Tulane receiver that
we know all about,
was actually recruited by Kansas State, an Alabama transfer. He picked Tulane over Kansas State. Doesn't sound like he's going to play. So injured.
Well, that'll be something to follow along with there. What are some of the other things in this game that you think K-State has to do well? Not, hey, they need to kind of go through here and I'd like to see this be better. What do they have to do in this game to come out on top and avoid a second loss in 3 years to the Green Wave?
Got to take care of the ball. What was interesting is Chris Klieman basically all offseason and then again throughout training camp was like, we have to be more explosive on offense. We have to stop explosives on defense. And we have to win the turnover margin. Those are my areas of emphasis this year. And I thought they sucked at all of those in week one, to be quite honest, because they weren't really all that explosive. They had 10 and 20-yard chunk plays. They didn't get that 40-yard big play. I think UT Martin got one, if I remember, on a pass. When Toby Osunsami didn't bring the guy quarterback down for a sack, they got their big play because the safeties, I think, just assumed that was going to be a sack. So you kind of blew that, and then you were minus two in a turnover margin against UT Martin because you didn't force any turnovers. So those two things, it's like if we're going to all offseason emphasize explosives, getting them and preventing them and then winning the turnover margin, and we're going to basically collapse on all of that in week one against UT Martin, you better have it right against in week two against Tulane. And I think a fast start would be great. Because I think Tulane's going in here with a little bit of swagger, thinking because of what they've done the past few years, they can hang with these types of programs that beat Kansas State in 2022. Mm-hmm. They beat USC in the Cotton Bowl that year. They think that they can hang and kind of giving them a punch in the mouth and shock to the system early, I think is huge. But also if you really jump on them early and you force a redshirt freshman quarterback to play from behind and have to throw the ball when you know he's going to throw the ball, I think that's a disadvantage for Tulane and an advantage for Kansas State.
Yeah, you mentioned the big plays for K-State. They had 10 carries of 10 or more yards game against UT Martin, so that was as advertised, and all of those, except for two of them, were over 15. They had runs of 32, 48, and 32 within that. And then on the passing side, much lesser, and this is where you would have wanted it to be a little bit better based on expectations. Only four plays of 15 or more through the air, 15, 44, 22, and 23. Definitely.
That's what I thought. I'm probably telling them that they suck there is probably, I was probably harsh and stupid to say, because those numbers actually sound a lot better than it felt, I'll be honest.
Yeah, I probably your reasoning for that would be, though, is that only two of them involved wide receivers, because the other two was the 15-yard touchdown to Dylan Edwards and then the 23-yard touchdown to Braden Lofton. So that's probably where it comes from. You would just hope that especially early against the FCS opponent UT Martin and then Tulane, you're seeing a few more of those big 15-yard plus chunk passing plays.
Yeah, more passing explosiveness would be nice, especially to the receivers. That rushing explosiveness kind of caught me off guard. A little bit more explosive in the rushing game than I remembered. DJ probably popped off a handful that I just failed to recall.
DJ had 48 on there, and then he also had 32.
I don't remember a 48 yard run and a 32 yard run.
His 48 one was when he got it inside the 20. That was at the start of the fourth quarter. And then the very next play, they went and had the touchdown for Dylan Edwards.
There was the vertical ball to Jace. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm not giving them enough credit for their explosives on offense.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get back to that in a moment, but it is time to take a pause on talking K-State Tulane. We'll have our picks and our game MVPs coming for you in a moment, but let's shift in to best bets. And first and foremost, I am doing a better job of keeping track of it this year, I promise, and we're off to a good start because I already have it ready to go. Here are the best bets from last week. Your recap, I went 2-1. DY started 1-2 because he hated a pair of Big 12 teams. Yeah. Meanwhile, I I really thought Hawaii sucked, and I think they still do. Turns out UCLA might get their heads beat in really bad in the Big Ten this year because they won, but they weren't able to cover the 14. The other two, well, I was going to say happened easily. Georgia happened easily. The under in Iowa, Illinois State got a little hairy there after the Hawkeyes learned how to score in the second half. Shout out to Xavier Lloyd. Had a really nice catch in that game for the Redbirds, by the way.
I got that one live at 26.5, so I kind of coasted. So that's what you got to do. You got to find the live line because it'll just be keep sinking and sinking. I will say I should – like, do I get bonus points for getting Penn State so comfortably correct?
I will give them to you, but then we take them away for being so wrong on Wyoming, who got beat 48-7 by Arizona State.
Definitely very wrong on Oklahoma State. And I lost those by quite a bit.
Yeah, you actually picked wrong in probably the two most impressive wins of last weekend for Big 12 teams.
Yeah, although if you really look at what Oklahoma State did, like you kind of get concerned.
Yeah.
if you look at the scores, like, man, Oklahoma State played good. And then you look at everything about that game, it's like, how do they win by this much?
Yeah, that is a very fair point because the yardage was within six of each other. The only real difference maker, there was one turnover by South Dakota State, and then they were 0 for 4 on fourth down, 3 of 13 on third down. So they struggled to just convert in those money downs.
And then Ollie Gordon, what do you have, like 4 or 5 yards to carry? I mean, he was just
4.5. He had carried the ball 28 times for 126 yards. Yeah. So Mike Gundy held true to his word about his punishment for his DUI this offseason.
Ollie Gordon rewarded him with a very pedestrian performance.
Yeah, well, but hey, he still got the vanity numbers. He also had three catches, so he goes over 31 touches.
With all those returning offensive linemen, I just would have thought like they would have – you know, smacked. If I look at the final score, I'm like, did Ollie Gordon have like 250 yards?
Yeah. So, all right. I start the year 2-1. DY starts 1-2. Let's dive into the best bets for this week. We will start with our best bet from the K-State game. We didn't give you one last week, but we'll start giving them to you now, mainly because, you know, they're not giving you props in the game against FCS opponents. You are taking Dylan Edwards to score a touchdown. That's very wise money at plus 145. That's like when you were getting Ben Sinnott at plus odds last year. It's like, of course Will Howard's going to get him a touchdown. I'm taking the Cats over the 28.5 team total, even despite the rain.
I took the safest one, but the best bet might be Dylan Edwards' two touchdowns. It's at plus 850.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Drew was in the DMs last night saying, you got to hop on this. So, yeah.
And then I would also say that Avery Johnson first touchdown at plus 700 is interesting. Mm.
Okay. Well, that's a little dicey because we know that they're trying to throw the ball a little bit more. Are they gonna let him run it? What's going to happen there?
Over 28.5. Technically, my score will have that. So I guess I'm on board.
All right. Let's get into our three each of best bets this week. I explained mine first last week, so I will let DY go first here, as he's got a couple of Big Ten games on there and then one Big 12 team.
Yeah, we'll start with the Big 12. Mason Bryce saw that and was like, what the heck? Because I know he's not a BYU guy, especially with Kalani Sitake.
No. That's a misconception. I actually like Kalani Sitake. I just know that they haven't been very good right now, or at least set up to not be very good, and he takes some ginormous risks that will either backfire or come through for him. So, no, I'm not a BYU hater, despite what some might think.
I am on BYU plus 10.5 because I thought Retzlaff looked really good at quarterback in week one. And I think it's probably, in a lot of these cases, we're talking about like with Michigan and with Tulane, that the other guy winning the quarterback job was like bad for business. I think Retzlaff being now Jerry Bohannon, it's probably good for business if you're BYU. That's the way I see that one. And they're playing SMU. SMU, new to the Power 4, Power 5 dynamic. They're an ACC school now that everyone is, I think, way too high on this year, by the way. Did not look great against Nevada by a long shot. Probably should have lost the game. And then if you look at what SMU did last year, and this is why like their total of at 7.5 wins just was like blew me away. That's why I went way under on their wins total this year. But they played four Power 4 teams last year. They lost them all. So you're going to tell me they're going to beat one in week two by double digits after nearly losing to Nevada? I just can't see that. So, like, and it also give us something to root for on Friday night when we're driving to New Orleans.
That's true. A little BYU and Big 12 power there. This is kind of it's a fascinating schedule this year for SMU because they started with the two, what should have been two easy games. They only made one of them easy as they played around at Nevada. But after BYU, a Big 12 opponent, they then play TCU, a Big 12 opponent. And then their very first ACC game down at Gerald Ford Stadium, Florida State comes to town. The very hungry Florida State Seminoles who might still be looking for their first win in week five.
Yeah, no, I can see it. So and if you wanted to sprinkle a little BYU money line, I don't think it's a terrible idea. Michigan, like I said, they have a quarterback problem.
That's
a
tiny number there.
Yeah, they have a quarterback problem, a first-time head coach, and a first-time head coach who loves low possession, run the ball, grinders. He's an offensive line coach. He's from Derby, Sharon Moore. Look, one of the games he was a head coach in last year, he didn't throw a ball in the second half when he had a first-round pick at quarterback. Like, this is what this guy likes to do, but he's playing a pretty good Texas defense. The under in general is probably the right play. I even have an alt line here at under 14.5, but you're going to give me 16.5 at minus 110. So that's the safe play. Under 16.5 for Michigan. I don't know that they're going to score a lot of points on good teams this year. I don't think that they have the offense to do it. They have the defense to hang around, though. So that's why you got to be careful. Oregon just looked like, you know, very, very badly against last week against Idaho. But at the end of the day, Dylan Gabriel still completed 42 passes for almost 400 yards, and they're playing a Boise State team that gave up a ton to Georgia Southern. I have to think Oregon's going to bounce back, and especially offensively against a team that really didn't stop Georgia Southern.
Yeah, the Oregon thing is just so fascinating last week. You look at the numbers, you're like, how did this happen? But they go out and they just had some unfortunate things happen where their third drive of the game, they miss a field goal. They fumbled on a drive that had gone 62 yards, and then the half ran out on them because Idaho was trying to kind of play the game. And Dan Lanning's favorite thing to do, he had two turnovers on downs in the game. So slightly fluky with what happened with Oregon last week. That's a good call on your part for the over 41.5 in the LeGarrette Blount revenge game.
And Boise State, Georgia Southern did everything they could against that defense.
Yeah. That'll be a fascinating one to see how the scoreboard looks, because 56-45 last week, they will certainly give up some points. Let's continue the hating on Michigan train, because I am taking Texas minus the 7.5. There would be reasons to, like you mentioned, Michigan's defense is going to be good enough to kind of keep their opponent from scoring an insane amount. But even with that happening, I still think Texas can win the game by 10 points pretty easy
with a late score, because Michigan's defense is just wore out by the end of it by holding water for their offense. Yes.
Yeah. That would
that's
be
a backboard cover, Texas. I could see. Yep.
Yeah. The other one, it pains me to do it. I was at the game last year between these two teams, but Lance Leipold is just such a far better coach than Brett Bielema at this stage of the game. And I don't see a world in which that Illinois team is able to keep it that close. So KU minus 5.5. I guess if you're going to have to watch KU win, you might as well win some money on them. So that would be the logic there. And then Texas Tech, there were a handful of teams out there that I think a lot of people are going to jump ship on this week and take the opponent, whether that be Washington State against Texas Tech or App State at Clemson. Both of those I considered. Clemson's minus 17. But I just have a tough time seeing Texas Tech going and losing to Washington State this weekend. I think that they'll get a couple of things figured out. Still no reason to think that Texas Tech will be all the way back with how they play, but I just don't see Texas Tech losing this game, especially because they had such a bad non-con last year. Then they get off to that bad start this year, even despite the win. I think that they're going to be pretty heavily motivated to figure this thing out and avoid another group of five loss on the road. Yeah.
Yeah, they'll be on high alert. And you know by my Big 12 power rankings that I'm not abandoning ship on Texas Tech just yet either. And I think actually the experience of last year, as you alluded to, will help them, especially this will be similar to their trip to Wyoming last year, I think. Mm-hmm. That's what it feels like. And you're talking about those teams that people probably overreact to and give up on too soon. There's also the opposite of that. I think there's going to be a little bit of an overreaction on Arizona State. So playing Mississippi State this week.
This guy hates the Sun Devils.
But I just didn't like that the hook was there at 6.5. That's why I didn't take it. But I do think Arizona State, if you wanted to fade the Sun Devils, it's probably a good call.
Yeah. All right. There you go. That is best bets for this week. We'll have the recap next week. And I'm guessing that by that point, DY will be in the lead. Like he'll be 4-2. I'll be 2-4 or something. So we'll roll on and get into going back to K-State and Tulane, give you our game picks and our game MVPs. Who needs to stand out for K-State this weekend for them to get the win on both offense and defense?
Yeah, it's a good question. One that immediately comes to mind on offense, right, is Avery Johnson. Play a little bit of a cleaner game, just look better doing it. I think it would be good for his confidence, for how the offense feels going forward and all of that. But my answer would probably be Easton Kilty. He or Carver Wells, whatever one gets lined up across from Patrick Jenkins the most. Because I think if they can keep Avery Johnson upright, Avery will take care of what I just said himself. So the offensive tackles in general to me would be my pick.
Yeah, I was offensively, you could pick an offensive lineman and go with it because they'll be crucial in this game for the reason you laid out. Like there's talent on that Tulane defensive line. And then also you just want to be able to give ample time to Avery Johnson. You want to be able to pave the way for your running game. If we're going outside of that though, I think Avery Johnson would be a valid answer in this scenario because it was so shaky last week. But I'll go with somebody that needs to come through to prove themselves. And that's Keegan Johnson. There was all of this offseason hype and it's going to get real easy for teams to devote the attention they need to Jace Brown. Like right now, K-State is a one-trick pony at receiver. Somebody else has to step up. It needs to be Keegan Johnson, and he needs to prove it pretty quick or there will be more people jumping off that bandwagon. So you need somebody else to step up in the passing game, especially when if the weather impacts at all or even not, you have to capitalize on your opportunities when they will be there because right now doesn't seem like there will be a ton of them for K-State. So I will be fascinated to see how Keegan Johnson responds after a pretty disappointing week one.
And there's multiple options on the defensive side of the ball. In my important player story earlier this week, I mentioned Damian Eli-Leo and Austin Romain being crucial, both of them, because you want to really stop the run. If you could really stop the run, if you could start fast and stop the run, you put Tulane into obvious passing situations where it's really not conducive to success for a redshirt freshman quarterback. I like that. But Mario Williams worries me a little bit, his explosiveness. So I go Jacob Parrish or I guess Keenan Garber, whatever corner will be matched up with him the most. So in general, the cornerbacks, I listed Jacob Parrish. But I think limiting and preventing the explosiveness of Mario Williams is pretty significant.
I will go with a linebacker and I will take – I was a little bit torn here, but I think that I will go with Austin Moore because – he's having to battle through some of the injury. And like what you alluded to when talking about kind of what Tulane's offense would do, I can't remember if it was even on this show or if it was yesterday when we were talking about the coordinators, but they're going to do a lot of stuff pre-snap, your discipline, your communication. It is going to have to be perfect come Saturday against Tulane. You're going to have to be good at that. Austin Moore is their best leader, their best vocal guy out there. I think he probably sees the game the best and can get everybody lined up. So I think he not only you need him to be in good physical playing shape, but you have to have his mental edge in the game. And if he's not out there, if he gets held back in any way from injury, that's not going to go very well for K-State. So I think that's an important part of this is going there. And I would just also throw in, kind of talking about the offensive line. We know that, some people would say that the game is won and lost in the trenches, but the K-State defensive line just has to go out and keep proving that what we saw last week wasn't just because of inferior competition, that they really can kind of assert their dominance in a lot of different games, because so much of what can be done to force turnovers and get stops in the passing game starts with those guys, even if they're not getting the sack, but at least forcing bad decisions or bad balls out of the hands of whoever's at quarterback, which would at least seem like right now it's going to be Darian Mensah, the redshirt freshman for Tulane.
And not specifically this game, but having Asa Newsome available is pretty crucial, so you can give Desmond Purnell some blows. He didn't really get any in the opener.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all goes down. Linebacker will be a fascinating spot to watch really over the next handful of games for K-State as they still try to get some guys healthy there and move forward with it. All right, looking at what you think the score ends up being in this game, do the Cats finally get a win over Tulane after the first two attempts against the Green Wave have gone poorly?
You look across college football, transfer-heavy teams have really struggled early on the season. A really good example of that is a team we've already talked about a little bit, and that's Florida State. They got a new coach, John Summerall, so they're still going through some transitions there and learning everything that kind of coincides with that. Is there an advantage to be had from that familiarity since Summerall coached against Kansas State last year against Troy? If there is, I think it's K-State because they played against him. They played against the offensive coordinator, and they played against the defensive coordinator. They also played against the team 2 years ago that he's now coaching. For him, maybe he's got some familiarity with the defense of Kansas State, but the offense might look a little bit different because Kansas State is new coaches. So, if anything, there's edge Kansas State there. Tulane, from a talent standpoint, unless some of these transfers are just going to all of a sudden just all hit at once, and I don't see that happening, I think they are far less talented than the versions of Tulane that we have seen the past two seasons in 2022 and in 2023. They are a lot worse at quarterback. That's the most important position on the field. If Kansas State were to start out fast, they can make life for that kid pretty difficult. I think the fact that Ty Thompson wasn't good enough to win the job is an indictment on the Tulane quarterback room. Maybe I'm wrong and I get proven wrong on Saturday, but that's just the way that I see it. It's hard for me to look at Tulane and be of the mindset that this is one of the better group of five teams that like Kansas State's played, like the Tulane of 2022. It kind of feels more 2021 Nevada-ish to me. I get more of a vibe on that front. I like Kansas State winning 31-10.
All right. Well, I'm in agreement with you there on what K-State scores. I have them at 31. At the start of the year, I had it 31-17, but after seeing the K-State defense last week, I believe in them even more than I already had. I think it's probably closer to the score you have. I think this game is probably close early. K-State's able to kind of suffocate it away towards the end. I will take the Cats 31-13. The number one thing that's made me think K-State has this game in a much better spot than the last time they played is one of the things you mentioned. The second that I saw that Ty Thompson wasn't the quarterback and really then the second quarterback in that game, that made me feel a lot better about K-State's chances. They still have to be clean. They have to take care of their own business, but Tulane is not going to be as tough as an opponent was the first time around. I think it'll be interesting to see how K-State plays against them, but I think things go pretty well for K-State down there. I expect that the offense looking the way it did to start last week's game, I'll buy some of the disjointedness in the way that they were given possessions early on and the pacing of the game. I also just think they played poorly, but I don't think it's necessarily indicative of what they will be moving forward. I think that they will be better than that, and I think it starts this weekend down in New Orleans. So give me the Cats 31-13 winners over Tulane this weekend. But a lot of that score prediction is going to rely on what the defense ends up doing. All right, before we get out of here, Big 12 scoreboard time, a look around some of the top games from the Big 12 this week. The early games, we already talked BYU-SMU a little bit because that's a Friday. DY likes the Cougars to cover there.
What do you like?
Even get the win. I mean, I think the fascinating one here out of these Big 12 games, at least the early wave, afternoon and before, Iowa State at Iowa obviously will be important to follow along with just to kind of get a gauge of how good is Iowa State. Because if Iowa State goes on the road and wins in Iowa City, that's something that they're not very good at under Matt Campbell. Then it would show to me that they probably get to take another step or two up in our Big 12 rankings. And then Baylor at Utah is fascinating just because Baylor, They didn't play anybody last week, but they dominated that game. That's a step in the right direction for them. If they can hang around and keep it inside the 14 and a half that they're getting at Utah, then I would also have to start to rethink some of my thoughts on the Bears. So Utah Baylor in a non-conference Big 12 game is one of the other ones that I'm interested in after that, out of that first set.
It feels like BYU and Iowa State are in positions where they should be competitive enough to maybe get a couple steals for the Big 12. And it feels like Oklahoma State and K-State are the ones that, like, you better take care of business so you don't give the Big 12 a black eye.
Yeah.
Baylor, Utah, two Big 12 teams. I think Utah probably pulls away there. Cincinnati, like, maybe that's one that's a little bit of a steal too. I just think them and Pitt are about the same.
Yeah,
like,
Cincinnati won that game last year on the road at Pitt. But
yeah, I was specifically asking, what do you think? Are you giving BYU a shot at SMU on Friday night?
Yeah, I am. I'm intrigued by seeing what they end up looking like. Last weekend was kind of eye-opening for me, and it made me think, oh, they could be better than anticipated.
Overrated. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting to watch because we know that K-State in 2 weeks is going to be going up to Provo. So good time for K-State fans to follow along with that one and see what comes out of it. The last half of games, here are some of the other notables this weekend in the Big 12. KU at Illinois, Colorado at Nebraska, Houston at Oklahoma, Texas Tech at Washington State, and Mississippi State goes to the Valley of the Sun to face Arizona State. Out of these games, which one do you like the most? Which one would be highest on your watchability factor, or I guess for us, listenability factor, since we'll be in the car driving?
Listenability, it's probably going, or watchability, whatever you want to say, it's probably going to be Colorado, Nebraska, because I think that one gets real competitive and there's interesting dynamics to it. What I will say is, like, the ones the Big 12 better get, I think, because if they don't, it doesn't look good, is like KU and Texas Tech.
Yeah,
those two have to win, and maybe probably not convincingly because they're on the road. I think KU does win convincingly. Tech probably doesn't because Pullman's a weird place. The other ones are obviously games where I think if you win, you're like, I feel like we stole one.
If Houston keeps it inside three touchdowns, it would feel like a win. Although, you know, OU had some shakiness at times in their opener against Temple last weekend. It'll be fascinating to follow along with some of those. Colorado and Nebraska, it's just always fun to see old Big Eight schools get together. So I'm excited to get to see how that one goes. And that, if you're a K-State fan, that to me is like a win-win situation where you can spin it either way. If Colorado wins, you're like, oh, look, Nebraska, you're not what you thought you were going to be. You're still in that pit of disparity. But then if, you know, Nebraska beats Colorado, you can keep touting that, you know, Deion Sanders is a fraud and not very good and making fun of him, which I prefer to do. So I don't know. In that game, do you have a preference on who wins, Colorado or Nebraska? Which one is better for your own personal record book and psyche?
Personal, probably Nebraska, but it also feels like one the Big 12 kind of would need from a reputation standpoint.
It would be good for the Big 12 if Colorado won that game.
Yeah, which it sucks because I don't think that I can, like, literally root for Colorado, so I'll just be like, oh, yeah.
I will not be rooting for them. I'll take the credit if they win for the Big 12, but yeah. I will not be pulling for it to happen.
And although they're almost a touchdown favorite, like, I think any win for Arizona State in that game would be good. Like,
yeah,
like I still think Mississippi State wins, so yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Arizona State here. If they win that one, then they are going to have a realistic chance at a third win the following week against Texas State. Mm-hmm. And then you move through and you go, okay, can you start to squint and see if they could find enough to be a bowl-eligible team this year, which would be highly impressive for Kenny Dillingham to do that. It would be tough, though, because Arizona State was dealt one of the tougher Big 12 schedules this year. I mean, they play at Tech. They play KU and Utah in back-to-back weeks. Then they're at Cincinnati, at Oklahoma State, UCF, and then at K-State, BYU at home, at Arizona. So, I mean, theoretically, even if they go 3-0 in the non-con, I probably only see two Big 12 wins for them there at best, and that would be BYU and Cincinnati, unless they surprise somebody.
And they got to play Cincinnati on the road.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a great time for Arizona State. They were not dealt a friendly hand by the Big 12 when their schedule came around. All right, that will do it for us and the KSO show preview as K-State and Tulane will get ready to go on Saturday, 11 a.m. Some wet weather in the forecast. Pay attention to that. The Cats try to get to 2-0 and avoid a second straight season where they go on the road and fall as a top 20 team in the non-conference. That happened last year against Missouri. I believe they were, 15 last year when they went to Mizzou, 17 this year in the polls as they hit the road to take on Tulane. So for Derek Young, I'm Mason Voth. Thanks for watching and listening to the KSO show. If you want more previewing K-State and Tulane or all of the post-game reaction, go to On3, find kstateonline.com, and stay locked in right here on the KSO YouTube as well. You'll be able to find highlights, the instant reaction, and all press conference footage as soon as the game wraps up down in New Orleans this weekend. So we are out of here. We will talk to you again Saturday after the Cats and the Green Wave do battle.